Good afternoon, Irish fans. You're in the right place. Irish Illustrated Decider on December 4th. But before I introduce my esteemed colleagues as usual, guys, please allow me a digression. The 1980s, there was a show called St. Elsewhere. 1990s, Seinfeld and Quantum Leap. 2000s, Lost. 2010, Game of Thrones. Each of those were must-see TVs, but shows with series finales that ended nonsensically, lacking context, or spuriously. Now in 2025, must-see TV is something called the College Football Playoff Selection Committee Special. It's weekly, it's half of a season, and in this case, it was the penultimate episode that left a lot of holes, unanswered or poorly answered questions, even a plot twist. So I ask you, Tim Priester, Drew Medtok, John Bryce, was your reaction, how dare you, or WTF, when the rankings came out on Tuesday night? Priester, we'll start with you.
Well, I, you know, the phrase I've been using, and I wrote it in Thursday Thoughts. I mean, it was a manipulation of the system. It was like, okay, how do we correct all these things that we've been doing and saying in recent weeks? Let's go ahead and flip-flop Notre Dame and Alabama for what reason? I mean, the reasons that were given were ridiculous. So let's let this play out. I don't think, you know, any of us are sitting here saying that this is all said and done, but that was a manipulation of the system, and we still have a problem because there's no way to ever come up with a college football system that's going to work satisfactorily, especially with all the politics that are involved with the conferences and protecting Alabama. Alabama could be 185th in the country in rushing, and they would still move up because they preserved a win against Auburn, which is a rival, and I know it's a tough place to play, but manipulation of the system is my phrase for the week.
Go ahead, Drew.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I wasn't shocked. I mean, I think there were some people thinking, and including JB, who said they're probably going to protect Alabama before, so don't be surprised. So I think there was a sense that this type of thing could be coming. I think one of my big reactions, and especially after stepping away from it a day or two, is just how the committee chair, Hunter Yurecek, how unpolished he is, and he almost seems like he's trying to present the perspective of everyone in the room, whereas Mac Rhodes, the former chair before he got let go or had to step down for justifiable reasons, would kind of share the prevailing opinion, and he sounded much more confident doing it. And I think even some of the justifications he tried to use, or the way he tried to present things or talk about Notre Dame's ranking with Miami, he kind of gets a little like he's trying to be as diplomatic as possible. And I think that makes it easier to pick apart and be upset with things.
You know, T.O., my reaction was not WTF. It was either WTAF or WTFF. And I thought that Hunter Yurecek came across looking very sycophantic toward the SEC. I thought that his explanation on Alabama was a complete, the snow that's piled throughout South Bend from the plows was how high the BS meter should have been pinging on Hunter Yurecek for his Alabama explanation. I thought it was absolute garbage. You cannot sit there and tell me, well, they led 17-0 and completely ignore the fact they needed a touchdown in the final 4 minutes and a fumble strip inside the final minute to preserve this win at a program that had already fired its head coach. But I also have said for multiple weeks, if it's going to be Alabama and Georgia in the SEC championship game, I felt Alabama would be protected. I'm sure we'll dive into it more. I certainly have theories and very strong beliefs as to why Notre Dame and Alabama flip-flopped this week. I completely disagree with it for a number of reasons, and we'll dive into that as we carry on.
Yeah, and we'll get into that right away. Actually, I want to point out that when you're going to start drilling down and saying Alabama led 17-0, you also have to drill down then and say Auburn was driving and got an interception because the ball bounced off a player's hands, flew over two safeties, landed into the hands of another before that fumble strip happened when they were driving for the winning score as well. If you're drilling down, you got to look at everything. Like, Alabama didn't earn that game. Now, there, I always will point out, Alabama winning at Auburn, 6-point spread. It is a better win than Notre Dame winning at Stanford, 30-point spread. But not enough to move ahead. It's not Auburn 8-4, it's the opposite Auburn. It's, you know, I know Auburn's better than Stanford. Look, the committee uses FEI and FEI Plus. Auburn is 70 spots ahead of Stanford in computer rankings. They are better, But it's not the moment where you're like, well, my God, they went to Auburn and pulled it out. It's, all right, don't move them down. They beat a rival. That's better than somebody sitting around and, you know, if Notre Dame had beaten Syracuse that week, 30-3, that's not a big deal. But there's no reason to move them in front of Notre Dame is how I look at it for beating Auburn. If you beat 9-3 Auburn, yeah, maybe you move
back. That's a different conversation. You want to talk about a stretch. The gutsy 4th-and-2 call. Oh. I mean, Marcus Freeman's faking punts at his own 16-yard line. What about, I mean, every week Notre Dame is taking this massive risk, and they were up 14-0. But I just, gutsy 4th-and-2 call, is that a metric now too? I didn't realize that.
I like that metric, the gutsy call of the day. All I got to do is go for it every once in a while. God, Narduzzi. He'd be the king of this. He should be in the tournament. They should be in the playoffs. They got Narduzzi making crazy calls out there. John Bryce, I want to ask you a quick question because we had about 3 of these. Does the committee, as far as you know, still consider FCS games something not to count? And as such, is Alabama not playing an extra game?
Yeah, the FCS games aren't a big factor in the metrics whatsoever. They're more or less ignored. I think that I can't remember if they even factor into the game control component, but they're basically ignored. But while they're ignored, a team's record is still shown on the board as 12-0 or 11-1.
This is going to be considered their 13th game, even though one didn't count.
Correct. And I think it's important to note that, and I've made this point before, but with the rankings where they are and us sitting here where we are, of the top 12, the top 14 teams, the top 14 teams, Notre Dame is the only program among those top 14 to not play an FCS opponent this year. And if I'm not mistaken, didn't Notre Dame play 10 power conference opponents and or a playoff team from last year in Boise State? I think that's right.
Yeah, Navy would be the only other one. And Navy's number 26 in the country if you're looking at actual rankings. Drew, I want to throw this to you. Either one. Let's go impacts of close wins, close loss, blowouts. BYU, let's start with BYU if you don't mind. Impact of a Brigham Young close loss to TCU.
I'm kind of at this point where you want them to lose close or by like a touchdown margin to Texas Tech so the committee can potentially justify keeping them in between Notre Dame and Miami would be potentially the ideal scenario. Before Tuesday, I was thinking you wanted a blowout and you want that game just to be obliterated. I think it'd be tough. Maybe they could do it to a close loss jump BYU over Notre Dame would be kind of crazy. So I don't see them going there. So I think you want to keep them there because, to be honest, Hunter Yurecek's explanation about the head-to-head matchup and how that could play out, you could interpret it either way. You could interpret it if they are compared next to each other, that head-to-head comes. If they are next to each other in the rankings, that head-to-head matters more, or Notre Dame's already ahead of them for a reason. So it's really hard to interpret. So I think a Boise State close-ish loss is probably – or BYU, excuse me. Closest loss is ideal.
JB, maybe you're in a better position to answer this. This whole, you know, head-to-head being side-by-side, is that actually written down or that was created along the way in the process?
I can't remember if it's actually written down. I
can't believe it is.
It is by now. They just went,
right.
Yeah, I will attest to the fact that when we were in the room, I really drilled down on head-to-head. I placed a lot of personal value in the room on head-to-head as we evaluated teams and very much stood on that. And I would note again, while we reseeded the 24 field, we did so with the 25 rules. So the guidelines that are being used that we're seeing perhaps gerrymandered on a week-to-week basis, I don't feel like we gerrymandered, but we used those original guidelines in mid-September, late September when we did this to reseed last year's field, which is why it ended up like Ohio State was our number 3 seed. Notre Dame was number 6. SMU got booted out of the field, all of that stuff. So the head-to-head is big. And when you get them up on a screen, and again, we could review teams in groups of 4. That's what they're supposed to be able to do. When we got them up on the screen and we had 4 teams up there, we definitely talked at length about head-to-head matchups and head-to-head components. So I didn't interpret it as though they had to be side-by-side. If we were debating teams and they played head-to-head, then that factored into discussion and that certainly factored into how I rank those teams.
Would you guys say then in the current made up rules world, a close Alabama and a close BYU loss is the best possible thing for Notre Dame, because teams are now being looked at in a pot of four with Miami, Notre Dame, BYU, Alabama, I assume Oklahoma, in their dramatic gutsy victory over LSU when guys were falling down for touchdowns, is going to be safely ahead of Notre Dame and Alabama no matter what. Without their coach and with everybody trying to leave.
I do wonder if a close Bama loss could cause Bama and Notre Dame to flip spots. And then you have Alabama as the buffer between Notre Dame and Miami. So this buffer that they've talked about, I very firmly believe, even though they would never admit it, I think the committee expected Miami to either play more lackluster down the stretch or to stub its toe again. I do not believe that this committee thought they would get to this final Sunday and potentially have one spot for Miami and Notre Dame.
They've played their way in my opinion.
Right. And I think, I think that was a conscious decision. It's like, okay, we'll leave an opening for you. Here it is. Now you have to go out and win all those games. But man,
and I should be clear, both of Notre Dame and Miami have played their way in. Miami.
Yeah. And I want to, yeah.
Miami's a top 11 team.
Absolutely. and I wrote this today, and some people object to it because somebody said that I'm trying to be overly objective about it. If one team gets in over the other, Miami should get in over Notre Dame. I believe that because I believe in it head to head. And I just think that would be the right thing. Here's the problem, guys. I mean, we have a 12-team playoff, and James Madison or whoever, I keep throwing out that name, or Tulane, JB, you know which one. One of those teams is going to get into the damn 12-team playoff, and Notre Dame's not.
Virginia's not. It's
They're 10-2, and at least they're from the ACC. But the process is not about Miami and Notre Dame. Head to head should go to the same way that I believed 30 years ago, or however long it was, with Florida State still stands. Head to head should stand. But how have we made things better if James Madison is going to the playoffs and Notre Dame isn't?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. And now I'm a little bit glad, selfishly, to hear more people discussing this. I think Drew and I first discussed it Sunday morning on Overtime, and that is the fact that if 7-5 Duke wins, then I'm not sure the ACC champion gets in, because now both James Madison and Tulane or North Texas are going to be positioned ahead.
Unbelievable.
In that scenario, I will say this. In that scenario, I do not believe the committee would allow the ACC to be entirely left out, which, again, is another reason why I think Notre Dame fans should cheer for Virginia, because in that scenario, if Virginia loses the title game, I really believe that the committee would find a way to get Miami in to avoid the ACC from being left out. But I also believe those other two conference champions, barring upsets, would be higher ranked than a Duke team that's lost five times, including to Tulane and including to UConn.
Yeah, I mean, Duke and FEI is fifth. I looked earlier today, 55. They're 54. James Madison is ahead of Virginia, by the way, when we're doing our comparison here. It's close. I mean, it's close. It's percentage points, 35 versus 38. I don't think the ACC, other than Miami, has a right to claim anything over James Madison. I think James Madison could go out and beat Virginia right now if you want to have those two play for a playoff spot.
Probably true.
Yeah, but Miami is better than both of them. I mean, it feels like people are still clinging to Virginia beating Florida State when it was fun back in September. I mean, that's not – it was a good time for everybody that night, but back down in Fayetteville on Dixon Street, everybody cheering against Florida State. But I don't think that would have mattered quite as much if they did it again now. We should quote Marcus Freeman. Freeman was asked yesterday about his reaction to dropping. He said, obviously disappointed, more so because of a little bit of confusion. You're confused in terms of what you could have done differently. When we won 49-20, but we're up 42-6, I don't spend time talking about other teams, but you wonder what you could have done differently. And of course, he says, you know, you're looking for cause and effect. Why did you fall? It's hard to explain completely. And I am all about, if mediocre Michigan fights Ohio State to death, that's harder than Stanford and Notre Dame. I get it. I understand it, but it's not enough to bump. Like, I think that means Alabama. I finished watching that game and thought to myself, Alabama survived. Good fight. You got to win that game to survive. Not, oh, Alabama's moving up in the list.
They had 280 yards total offense. Yes. 280 yards total offense. Yeah.
They were the gutsiest yards you could find, though, on the field that day.
At least those two were.
Yeah. I think that's a good point, because in the past weeks, Alabama was kind of knocked for not being a complete team. Like, they just don't run the ball well, and they didn't do anything in that game to dispel that perception of them. So that's kind of interesting. That Notre Dame is still much more complete than them.
They are not built to advance in the playoffs. I mean, if you're getting beaten in the trenches, that's the equivalent of you have a baseball team that can't hit a fastball, and you have a basketball team that can't finish at the rim.
Yeah, I mean, I think Oklahoma is arguably among the top 10, the most ill-equipped to advance anywhere. Three turnovers at home, terrible offense, needed a busted coverage to win that game. They did win at Alabama. That is better than any win on Notre Dame's schedule. But then I retweeted it. I couldn't resist and I like Dusty Dvorak. I think he does a solid job.
I saw your retweet. Yeah.
When they were talking about how ain't no offense in college football wants to see that defense, I had to retweet that with a picture of the Ole Miss box score, because that game was in Norman, by the way.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Ole Miss, not only, this is my favorite stat, and I know sometimes time of possession is BS like the committee, but Ole Miss scored 34 points and had the ball for more than 35 minutes. That's an offense doing whatever the hell that offense wanted to do that day.
Well, and
they kicked a field goal in every quarter. They should have had 49 points. They literally made a field goal in every single quarter of the game, ran over.
I just think, too, that is an offense that every college football playoff team wants to see, too, which needs to be part of the discussion. I think they're 80th or 81st in offensive points per drive. So you can't only highlight one side of the ball and not point out to the fact that they're below average in the other.
That's a great point, Drew, because let's throw out the two group of five conferences that could make the playoffs, Virginia and James Madison. Who would you like to face if you're a fan of any team? Everybody answers Oklahoma.
Yeah.
You can't say group of five Virginia, and you can't say group of five James Madison. Yes, I realize what
when
I'm saying.
When it looked like Notre Dame was going to Oklahoma, it was like, all right.
Okay, well, where's the quarterfinal? If it looks like you're going to Oregon or Ole Miss without their coach, but Ole Miss, you know, you're like, oh, that's going to be an offense to deal with right there.
Here's my last bit of belief / conspiracy theory / maybe this Abeja hat is actually a tinfoil hat. I don't know. I really believe Alabama was flip-flopped, both in protection of Alabama, but in the what-if scenario, if BYU wins and Alabama loses closely, they can still jump Alabama with BYU and bump Alabama down to 10, and they're still very protected right there. Now, if that happens, I still don't know what it does with the ACC and the G5 and all of that, but I really firmly believe Alabama leapfrogged this past week with that hollow explanation from Juracek in the event that if BYU wins and Alabama gets knocked down a spot because of it, much like SMU got pegged down three spots last year, Alabama still stays in the field in that way.
Before we get to National Signing Day, I do want to read this from CMU Pens fan, because it's not really a question, but I thought it would be a fun one to put in this segment. Since the committee said they will revote everything after the conference title games, is there a chance the rankings as we know them are completely thrown out, since this committee has had no idea what they're doing the whole time and have specialized in gaslighting everybody? I thought that was a wonderful way of looking at the revote. Just like, just forget what every team has done. Let's start looking at gutsy plays, and we'll see who had the most gutsy plays to get in this.
I've always defended the integrity of the process, and
that's why I did the intro with TV. Don't defend TV. That's what this is.
I understand, but I thought the committee ultimately last year did as good a job as they did, as well as they possibly could. Again, I'm the one that says there's no way you're going to satisfy everybody.
Well, not that's for sure.
I mean, you know, but I thought the committee was doing a pretty good job until this past week. That just, you manipulated the process to ultimately make it work for you at this point.
And you elevated Ole Miss in the midst of insane controversy, and you have the players making TikTok videos this week about Lane Kiffin leaving, and you have them chiming in on social media and doing all this other stuff. You can't tell me that's not a distraction. You can't tell me that Ole Miss started the process of making Pete Golding its permanent coach Saturday night without the college football playoff in mind, especially when you hear Keith Carter come out and say that Lane Kiffin was never going to be allowed to coach in the playoffs, which I referenced previously on this podcast and the Football Scoop podcast. That had been being debated for 2 weeks. That was a huge sticking point among Lane Kiffin and how this was all playing out. But again, when Ole Miss, in any SEC team, is acting with that expediency in a search, then there's something underlying there, and what was underlying. And then that's why Ole Miss leaked it and then sent a tweet out about Charlie Weiss calling the plays. Every single bit of that was a message to the selection committee Tuesday night. And all that happened, Pete Golding got the job Sunday. All that stuff started happening. All that stuff started leaking out. Players started making videos Monday and Tuesday. The Charlie Weiss news broke Tuesday afternoon, and Ole Miss issued the graphic again before the committee could ever meet. That was not coincidental.
You should have, if you're Lane Kiffin. I mean, you just tell Charlie Weiss Jr. don't get on the plane in front of everybody to have them scream and boo you. You can go on a proverbial plane without getting on the actual plane that Lane wanted everybody to get on. Drew, I want to go to you very quickly about National Signing Day, because you had a podcast yesterday with Eric Thomas. Before we get Priester and Bryce's thoughts, just kind of wrapping up your maybe one or two impressions from the class, something, and I encourage everybody to watch the podcast with Eric and Drew as well. But for those that are focused only on this one today, what are your kind of takeaways?
I think just the way Notre Dame is starting to recruit defensive backs. I mean, if you look at Notre Dame, I think they haven't had a first round corner since 1994 in the NFL draft. You're starting, Benjamin Morrison was close despite having hip surgery in the middle of last season. He was still a second rounder, but you're starting to put together classes that, you know, Leonard Morris should go there next year, but they're stacking defensive backs. They've had three in the top 75 this year, including a five-star safety, Dallas Golden and Mark Zachary last year, and some other talented guys like Cree Thomas and even Nick Reddish, who might be the lowest ranked guy in the class, is more talented than that. So I think that's my biggest overall impression. And just the fact that, I mean, it does rank so high. It's not just us like finding diamonds in the rough or Notre Dame's evaluation saying this guy is better than everyone else think he is. That this class is, you know, some of the, like, USC's ahead of Notre Dame in the rankings. I think they have seven or eight more players in them. So, and the, if you look at the 24/7 sports percentages, it's not that much higher. So I think this is a class that everyone evaluates highly, regardless if you're in the building or looking at it from a national perspective.
JB? I want to read this real quickly, and I can't claim this research as my own, but shout out to my unofficial research assistant who sent this to me and said, feel free to use this stat. So I'm using it. Notre Dame arguably has the most talent-laden recruiting class in 26, tied with Georgia and A&M for the most combined four and five stars signed at 23 apiece. But Indy has an overall higher recruiting ranking of 92.67 than those two, and is tied with Bama and Oregon for the most five stars with four. So what we've talked about for 4 years now, even though we weren't colleagues all four of those years, is that Notre Dame is recruiting at a pitch that we have not seen in the modern era. And you guys know it so, so much better than me. But to me, the way that Notre Dame is starting to stockpile talent is similar to that 89, 90, 91, 92, 93 era of Notre Dame football, when I saw those 90 and 91 games against Tennessee, and the two teams would have a combined 30 NFL players playing in the game. So nobody's stacking depth the way that Alabama and then Georgia hoarded depth for the previous 15 years, but the talent that Notre Dame is pulling in and recruiting is phenomenal to me. And then abutting Drew's point, I would also note not just how well they're recruiting in the secondary, but we heard Mike Martin mention it yesterday. They're recruiting at a length that is just invaluable. And these guys know, and Marcus made reference to it yesterday as well. I mean, Kyle Hamilton wasn't a Marcus Freeman recruit, but he finished his career under Marcus, and he's a big, long, rangy guy that can do so many different things for the Ravens. Ex-Watts found a home under this staff and now is playing great football as a rookie for the Falcons. Ben Morrison, despite a hip injury that cost him the final 12 games of Notre Dame's season, was a top 50 pick or so and has had some very bright moments. So Notre Dame realizes, and I think can point to the NFL, but also show that they can get them ready for the NFL, and they have the body type. And now you have guys to point to that say, look, they played here, and you have Mike Martin to point to and say, well, I was in the Detroit Lions front office, and this is what we value.
JB, it's exactly where I was going. Love the length, especially the top end guys here. People argue with me all the time. I'll do a film review of somebody, and I question the size of a safety, and then they tell me, you know, what the average height of safeties is in the NFL. Length is, I mean, length is leverage. Length is better. And when you see guys like, you know, Aiden Pouncey, I think it was absurdly underrated throughout the whole process, and everybody finally caught on. Joey O'Brien, I probably don't have him ranked as high in the class as some others, because I want to see some better suddenness and change of direction at a position where you really need that. But he has length. He's a tremendous athlete. I'm not questioning that. Adams at cornerback, length. Iwatade, who I think is, you know, really came on his senior year, but still kind of a project, a tremendous skill set. I love the pick of Charlie Tom, the offensive lineman, who was, you know, a few months ago was a tight end. I think that he has, you know, again, that length and athleticism that you need. You know, I've gone through 44 Notre Dame recruiting classes, so I generally don't gush, you know, on signing day when these guys come along. And I think there's still some questions on the back end of this class, like there always are. But I love the approach. I love the length. McKehoe, the offensive lineman, I thought was an amazing sleeper when they caught him, you know, when they did. And guys like, you know, Elijah Golden, he's got a lot of, he has to make up a lot of ground, but you know, I think he's got the work ethic that if he applies himself, that, you know, that size and that body is going to take him to the top. Even a guy like Preston Frizell, the tight end, who I usually, you know, I try not to overrate smaller tight ends, because we say, oh, well, he's a, you know, a slot guy. Well, usually the ones that excel the most in Notre Dame are the ones that are attached and that can do some other things. But I look at a guy like that, and it's hard for me to rank him down low. So I really like the class, and long story long, really like the length of this class especially.
Irish fans, you remember Rocket Ishmael, his speed, his signature, his impact on Notre Dame football. Now you can wear his legacy. Signature Pro Apparel's Rocket Ishmael collection is officially open for pre-order, featuring premium polos and rugby shirts, each embroidered with Rocket's authentic signature and officially licensed by Notre Dame. Pre-orders are perfectly timed for holiday gifting. Visit SignaturePro.com and use Irish20 to save 20% before pre-orders close. That's SignaturePro.com, legacy in every thread. We'll be back with segment two, Burning Up the Boards. With football season winding down and the playoffs approaching, I've been looking to find the best deal on Notre Dame tickets, both for family and friends, but also as a memorable gift idea. That's why I want to offer the sponsor of today's Burning Up the Boards, SeatGeek, a huge shout-out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. So whether you're an Irish fan looking for a ticket to the AC/DC concert in September, or any of college football's playoff matchups down the road, SeatGeek has your back. Each ticket is rated on a scale of 1 to 10, so you know you're getting a good deal. Look for the green dots. Green means good, red means bad. Plus, every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. And of course, I have a code for you guys. You can use Irish10, that's all capital letters and the number 10, for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. 10% off any tickets, promo code Irish10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you, SeatGeek. Our first question comes from Not Hall Jugs Machine. That's some dedication, getting a Jugs Machine outside of Not Hall. John Bryce, this is probably a starter for you. Many of the recent coaching carousel negotiations have featured schools promising to dedicate significant NIL funds beyond the revenue sharing maximum. Isn't this explicitly rule breaking?
No, because now here's where it's explicitly rule breaking. And I will tell you very candidly, obviously not the schools, but that I have had multiple schools tell me, yeah, we just get the deals outside and run them through NIL Go. Or we don't run them through NIL Go. Like, that's a direct quote from a sitting general manager at a power conference program right now, and not a power conference program that Notre Dame has any affiliation or association with on a regular basis. So anyway, yeah, it's not expressly against the rules. The rules are the schools have had $20.5 million in this first year of rev share. It goes up by 4%. So that's roughly $2 million. Next year that it will add to it to make it $22.5 million. That's the most that the schools have to divvy out in a revenue share arrangement. And remember, that's a theoretically among all sports. Now, Notre Dame is paying football, men's and women's basketball, and I think some select individuals and a handful of other sports. That's the gist of it. So, but it's not illegal. what is it? It's from The Hangover, Alan. It's not illegal. It's frowned upon. So it's frowned upon, but much like the guys in the car with Alan who couldn't do anything about him, if they don't get busted by NIL Go, they can't do anything about it. That's the best way and probably the most entertaining thing I've ever done.
I think it's also too difficult to, if everyone's kind of breaking or whatever you want to put it, a rule, then it's really hard to enforce it. Everyone's finding ways to do things to a degree. And it's also worth noting that the SCORE Act was supposed to be voted on in the House yesterday, which was supposed to address allowing players to get NIL money, but also promote fair compensation. And that vote got delayed again. So that could potentially make this stuff more official. I'm sure John knows a little bit more about the details of what might have been in that bill. But until maybe you get some federal regulation involved, it's hard for the NCAA to do all that much at this point, I feel.
You brought drugs from a guy outside the liquor store? Yeah, he seemed like a real straight shooter. That's the other Allen line for JB right there. Priester, all I have for that one is there is no Markinson. Would you like to add to there is no Markinson world?
No, no, no.
All right. Next question is a double one. It's about the other group of five school programs or group of five conference. I'm sorry. Andy Mack, with how the ACC has publicly handled Notre Dame and Miami's playoff rankings, do you believe there is a straw that breaks the camel's back in regards to Notre Dame's scheduling agreement with the ACC? And Kali 123 wonders, the ACC network has now played the Notre Dame-Miami game 13 times this week. That's obviously more than a rogue intern. Any idea what ND's relationship with the ACC looks like right now?
Didn't we, JB, we addressed this a couple podcasts ago. I mean, I just don't, I mean, it's all very annoying. I understand that. I don't know that this is well, who's Notre Dame going to affiliate themselves with? I mean, I don't know that playing the Notre Dame Miami game is cause for ending a relationship with the conference that, you know, for better or for worse is, I mean, really for Notre Dame overall is for better, not necessarily when it comes to football, but its entire agreement with them. I don't really know what to say about this because I don't think running the Notre Dame Miami game is cause for Notre Dame to run away from this relationship with the ACC.
No, but that relationship, if it was frosty before, it's hell's frozen over now.
It's not a random 20-year-old doing it. This is a highly paid person.
Yeah, it's very intentional. It's been very intentional. You know, ACC digital media content strategist is not an intern. That's a handsomely paid position, actually. So what would it take to answer the question? What would it take for Notre Dame to do something? Like, I think they would have to miss the playoffs the next two or three years until it expanded to 16. And here's what I continue to think. I heard some people talking about it. I talked with some coaches about it. I still believe we're closer to a 40 to 60 team, some sort of super league where there's some collective bargaining for the television contracts and these other things, as well as some scheduling components, than we are to seeing Notre Dame truly need to join a conference, because the conferences themselves are coming under so much scrutiny right now. I can't even remember. Oh, it was John Gruden, the great John Gruden, going off yesterday about his solution to fix the CFP. And he absolutely shredded the Big Ten and the ACC for being spread so far flung out and having teams playing in championship games that didn't play the toughest teams or didn't have to play, or that Oregon, he made the point, Oregon's sitting at home 11-1 with an extra week of rest while Ohio State and Indiana try to play for a bye. And yeah, the flip side of that is Oregon can't get a bye at this point, but they're getting a bye right now and they'll get to play a home game. So I thought that was very interesting. He said the same things that I've said several times now, that they need to get together, that they need to pool the top 40, 50, 60 teams and do some more regional scheduling and have it. And he made the point, like, look, at the Bucks, when I was there or when I was at the Raiders, I knew I won the NFC South because I played every team in our conference two times a year. And when I was in the AFC West, it was the same thing. So this is not strictly a Notre Dame issue. This is a college football issue and college athletics, but especially college football, because college football is the overwhelming engine driver to, I think someone told me, 92% of the programs in college athletics derive most of their revenue and income from the football programs.
The problem, what is Notre Dame's alternative to the ACC?
Well, a Big Ten scheduling arrangement, like a pseudo join the Big Ten in all the other sports. You're already there in hockey. I'm not saying I agree with that, TP. You're asking what a solution could be. Notre Dame aligns with many Big Ten schools every bit as well as it does ACC schools. So, and it's already in there for hockey.
That's fair. When you say the great John Gruden, the great James Gruden was actually my wife's chief resident at Emory when she was at med school. You guys know that about John Gruden's brother. Follow that up, Drew. Try that. I'm for size.
I mean, the only thing I'll say is to JB's point, I mean, the ACC is clearly panicking that, I mean, they could have a playoffs without an ACC team in it. And it's because of their rules that has Duke in it over the much higher ranked team like Miami, even though I believe they have the same conference record. It just went to a different tiebreaker system. So they're panicking. They're doing everything they can to ensure that a disastrous scenario doesn't happen for them. And maybe that's at the detriment of its relationship with Notre Dame, but I at least understand why they're going to the degree they are to do it.
How about if Notre Dame makes it and Miami doesn't? What do you think the next couple of weeks at the ACC is going to look like on the ACC?
it'll get frostier, right, JB?
Absolutely. Yeah. Again, and to the topic of discussion and why the ACC is doing this, yeah, they played that Notre Dame game 13 times or whatever it is, and they've sent all the graphics out. But again, I don't think it's strictly about Notre Dame. It's trying to assure itself that if Duke does win, it has positioned Miami to still give the ACC a CFP representative. That's why I'm not sure there's a more powerful brand in college football than Notre Dame, but I don't think Notre Dame is more powerful than an entire ACC.
Our next question is from Irish Fan 36 and a half. Can you discuss the reclassification rumor that's all over the Irish Illustrated message board?
Drew, why don't you just go ahead and jump into that? Because I know you and Eric Thomas have been dealing with the signing day and everything going with that as we move forward here this week.
Yeah, I mean, I know Eric touched on it vaguely yesterday in the recruiting podcast, but I know it's kind of already out there that quarterback Teddy Girard is thinking about reclassifying. It sounds like that's something that definitely could happen, and it's something that Eric and Tom Loy have been on top of trying to figure out details on. So I think obviously there is some concern, at least amongst media members, and what Noah Grubbs could add. So that is somebody who, if he can get on campus a little early and is the type of talent I know TP and other people think Teddy Girard is, that could kind of bolster Notre Dame's future at that position, immediate future potentially. And yeah, we'll see what happens with that. Yeah.
Tim, can I kind of tie in what we had there? Because I do think like that we had an inquiry about next year's class and who you like the best in that class and whether Teddy Girard is in this class or, well, next year. I'd put him at the top. I think that he is just getting rolling. I think his ceiling is very, very high. I like the other cat. I like, you know, James Halter, Jordan Halter's son in that class. I think that he has a chance to be really good. He's clearly been instructed by his dad, who's taught him the Joe Moore way. And, you know, there's some ball players in there. Now, you know, Ellis McCaskin is a guy that committed a little while ago. I like that linebacker too. But I think Teddy Girard's a difference maker. And boy, if you can move him up a year, that could solve some questions and some issues that Notre Dame has at quarterback moving forward just because of the disparity in the timing of arrival.
I mean, I think it's also relevant to note that when people ask about CJ Carr's future, if CJ Carr's really good, that's why you need to bump somebody up into this class, because otherwise you are portaling for a quarterback.
Well, that's the standard. CJ Carr's a standard at quarterback now for Notre Dame, so.
Our next question, number 5, Irish from A2. If Notre Dame misses the playoff this year, where would this team rank in terms of best Notre Dame teams not to play for the title?
Tim, do 89 and 93 play for a title on January 1st, kind of, and just not get it?
I mean, it was different then. I get 89 certainly was a tremendous team. I always go back to, we've talked about this, Tim, through the years, that I thought by the end of the 92 season that was a national championship level team. They had some missteps along the way, and so that would precluded that from happening. But 92, I think, is the certainly 89, because, you know, it's funny, I still talk to some of the guys that carried over from 88 to 89, and the guys that were still around for 89 but weren't, you know, that weren't in the just with the 88 team think that they were better than the 88 team. That was, I mean, really the golden era of Notre Dame football there during the Lou Holtz tenure, but 92 was really a great team too. That's the first one that pops in my head.
Yeah, I think 92 is the only one that didn't really get a chance to play for it. I mean, right. 89 and 93 could have won last day. There was a de facto championship game in the Sugar Bowl without the 92 team. So it's 92 versus this one. 92 team was pretty good. I'd say the 92 team and then this one. And I will go back to the 89 one. You know, I know Lou Holtz campaigned when they won that game over number one. Or he had every right to, Oklahoma. That was the human being seeing Miami handle Notre Dame the last game of the year. You weren't getting the vote over them, even though you played nine bowl teams. But that's why Notre Dame should have gotten the vote over Florida State the next year. I think Miami correctly won that title, and Florida State erroneously won their title.
Yeah. Or Notre Dame wasn't given a chance like they would now.
If we're looking at BCS era and beyond where there's been a title game or some form of playoffs, I would think this would be the best team not to contend for a title. I mean, if you look at the Sagarin ratings and most other advanced metrics, they're anywhere from 2 to 4, 2 to 5. So this is an elite team based on a lot of those statistics. Usually those teams do perform pretty well in the playoffs. And if they don't get in, you'll have a team like Oklahoma, which I think is 16th in FPI right now. So there are some other teams that could get ahead of them just from the rankings perspective too.
Much like Tennessee in the Peyton Manning years, like I feel like would have been a playoff team every year, except the Vols couldn't get over the Steve Spurrier hump, who's one of my all-time favorite coaches. Enjoyed all my interactions with him. God, he's hilarious. I feel like from 89 to 93, Notre Dame would have been a playoff team that nobody wanted to see every single year, whether that had been a 4-team playoff, an 8-team playoff, what have you. So I think any of those, as a college football fan and historian or self-ascribed historian, would be in there. You guys would know this better than me. I just remember very clearly feeling like Notre Dame got screwed on that rub call at Florida State that year.
Oh, yeah. In 2014. It all went south, though. But, yeah, they did get screwed.
Well, I know. I've heard. Or maybe I've seen. I just didn't know who you were.
I thought my call should have counted. I was singing touchdown.
I thought it should have counted as well.
You need to wear a different outfit.
And then this year, and forget it being opinion, and again, it doesn't mean anything comes Selection Sunday, because Florida State was -800 to make the field 2 years ago, the morning of the selection show. But just this morning, MGM Grand has Notre Dame with the third best odds of winning a national title at +400. Third best. I believe I saw that they're tied with Georgia this morning for third best national championship odds.
Hey, JB. Do you know why Peyton Manning went back for his senior year at Tennessee, according to Steve Spurrier?
For one more time to the Citrus Bowl.
He said he could be the first ever 4-time MVP of the Citrus Bowl. And also, the You Can't Spell Citrus Without UT might be the greatest coaching call.
It had to be.
Well, let's not forget Free Shoes University.
Oh, okay. Well, so one more for Spurrier.
I'll give that one.
One more for Spurrier. We got to give it to him. When their library burned in Auburn, he said the crime of it was 15 books weren't colored in yet.
Yeah. And last little random personal nugget is that Steve Spurrier and I were born about 15 miles apart in East Tennessee. So there you go. Not a lot more than 15 years, but just about 15 miles.
Tim, are we moving up to question 6?
I am on question 6 right now.
Go for it.
Yeah. Where is wide receiver on the portal priority? Can you speak on your perception of the wide receiver development on the team? And when will Indy no longer need portal replacements at wide receiver?
Well, I think you're always going to need and want portal replacements. To me, the bigger question is like defensive tackle, where I think there's an obvious need going into this year. But wide receivers up there, does it really matter where you're always going to want to plug and play? So, I don't know what to say about that other than D tackle is a definite need because of who you're losing this year. It's also true with wide receiver. We'll see how the running back room shakes out. I don't know. They continue to, there's no, I'd love Caden Finley. I think Caden Finley has a chance to be really good. And I think that Braden Robinson, a little wide receiver coming in this year, I really like his game. I don't think that his lack of stature is going to hurt his game. I don't know, guys. What do you think? Like, what are your thoughts on, like, which positions they shouldn't have problems recruiting? DB, corner.
Yeah, I don't I would contend wide receiver is a top three portal need for Notre Dame. Yeah. I think it's defensive tackle is a clear number one, or interior D line is a clear number one. If you can find an experienced quarterback out of the portal, because you're going to lose Kenny Minchie, I think that would be probably my number two. And then number three would be wide receiver. And I think Notre Dame, we heard Mike Martin make reference yesterday, Notre Dame is down the road with some positions of need as it comes to portal plans and evaluations and all of that stuff. But it is not tampering.
Yeah, I also would throw in maybe running back if Aeneas Williams leaves and Kedron Young's health isn't at an optimistic place. So that could be a place that they also look to go to prominently. But I agree. I mean, especially wide receiver, because that is a place where they can also hit pretty easily. It's also going to be a priority, and it's something they can make look very attractive. So I think it's going to be a priority, in part because they're going to be able to have success there, which makes it a little easier to pursue.
I don't know how far Notre Dame is away from not getting a portal wide receiver target every year. Ohio State doesn't need to do that. You absolutely are getting one this year, if not two. I mean, you might lose Greathouse. You will get you'll return Faison and Gilbert. Elijah Burrow should be good. You absolutely need one or two wide receivers this year. I don't know why you would not want one. Why would you not bring in a fifth-year Malachi Fields all the time? You know, it's not like they promise everything to these guys. You have to earn your spot.
Yeah, I feel like the question's being asked is like, this is a deficiency in the process. And I don't really look at it that way. You 8-9 guys on a regular basis, you plug and play. Gaps occur for various reasons. So whether it's wide receiver or D tackle's the one that where it's tricky, and they definitely need to tap into that this year. We have a question from Memphis Phil. Are there any players in particular who will benefit the most from some time off to heal up some nagging injuries?
Depends. Shout out Memphis Phil. If you could do the 1-800 pigs fly and send me some rendezvous, I would be hella grateful. I think you can say about every single offensive lineman. You can make that claim, obviously, for continued rest and recovery for Gabriel Rubio in the hopes that you get him back, and Billy Shrouth as well. Those guys didn't play down the stretch, but you want them back. So 3 weeks certainly helps them. The linebacking core, especially Drake Bowen, who's played a ton of snaps. And then obviously Tay Johnson, who missed the last couple of games. This extra time gives him, like we said, right at a 4 week window to recuperate. That's my. And then, obviously, Jeremiah Love has had the most carries of his career. So, hell, I've named the whole team. I apologize.
And, I mean, I would throw in Noah Burnett in there. I mean, this still is a team that no one else has made a field goal on this roster, and they haven't made one since early October. So maybe they can get him back in the rotation if he's actually healthy. We'll see. And then, I mean, Christian Gray is starting to play some of his best ball. He's not a guy. He's been healthier. So kind of keeping him there, I think, is significant.
It's a huge point. Christian Gray healthy is very important for what they ask him to do. I will add one more guy, because I thought he was better for 10 games. Let's throw out Navy. I still thought he was better for 9 games than the rest of the way through. Boubacar Traore, after a year of rehab and playing after tearing his ACL, he could probably use those 3-4 weeks.
Yeah.
You can see Traore back in true form for the Sun Bowl and or playoff game.
Sorry. JB, we're thinking alike here, because just about everybody you mentioned, I mean, Bowen started 28 straight games. I know we're dipping back into last year. Eli Raritan, look at all the snaps that he's had to log. And I'd throw in a Don Shuler too, because he plays such a physical game. He's probably got a few bumps and bruises there from hammering on people. Yeah, you know, I mean, but top of the list, Shrouth and Rubio. You know, and I mean, we don't know, when's Notre Dame going to play? Is it going to be the 20 days into December, or is it going to be 30 days into December, which Sun is Bowl. I don't even want to laugh at that.
Doesn't really matter who's recovering if it's 30 days into September, because it won't be Jeremiah Love.
It won't be Jeremiah Love if that's the case.
Probably wouldn't be Billy Shrouth in that.
I wouldn't be Billy Shrouth either.
To think the possibility that we don't get to see Jeremiah Love play for Notre Dame again, considering how it ended against Stanford with a cheap shot from Wilfredo Ibar. I mean, did it? I don't feel like there was enough outrage about that. Was there?
I think after the fact there was live, you didn't notice it. That's part of it. It looked like just, I didn't even notice what happened live. It was when you saw, I think.
Well, live's understandable. You had to see the video of that, no doubt. But yeah, there's a bunch of guys, but, I would start with the offensive line because, you know, those guys, Wagner's started 28 straight games. Knapp has been, he hasn't started 28 straight games, but when he wasn't starting, he was battling to get back from an injury. You know, Apsher at this point and Odding have stacked up a few games, and they hadn't played at all prior to that, really.
Our next question is from Fancy Golf Pants. Which interior defensive linemen have stood out the most this year? How do you project the position for next year? Will we need to take a transfer or two at the position?
That's a great name.
Fancy Pants.
I put these questions there. I didn't even notice.
Oh, baloney. You pick by name. I know you do, Tio.
This is one time I did not pick my name. This is a really good one. So I didn't rank him the highest for mine, but I wanted to put some, I guess it's not metrics necessarily because someone's still ranking them by watching film, but everybody has opinions there. You guys try to guess who Pro Football Focus has down for the most stops. So that's not only stuffs, but it's considered a failure for the offense because of the play made by that player.
Among defensive tackles?
Yes. I will tell you a tricky question if that's a hint.
I know the answer, so I'm going to stay out of this.
You looked it up, Andrew.
Oh, all right. Well, I'm not getting
Drew does his homework for these podcasts.
He really does.
He was
really
looking this up, yes.
Yeah, he sat in the front row in school, too. Nerd.
Horshack was doing
that. I don't know. I'm not getting the tricky angle
here. Drew, reveal.
Elijah Hughes.
Oh, okay.
A little bit of a margin if you go
no. No, total.
Oh, total. Wow, he's 15.
15 with 100 less snaps than Onye. And Onye had 13. Let me see. Sorry. And then also 70 less snaps than Jared Dawson, who had 10. Actually, I am very surprised that Donovan Heinisch Heinisch's snaps went a little lower this year, but I'm very surprised he only had 9. I think I would have guessed, because, you know, Heinisch has some boomer bust plays. I would have thought Donovan Heinisch would have been a little bit higher on this. In fact, Heinisch had 17 last year, although that's not fair because they played 16 games.
I don't know what to, you know, I'm usually not up on the numbers, but I'm more of an eye test guy, and Onye's played really good football in November. Jared Dawson, you know, it was just a few weeks ago when people were asking questions about, you know, how do you think these transfers have played? Those guys have come on. Dawson has definitely come on. Onye is not a transfer, but he's come on. Certainly Devontae Smith in November, or at least the last three games, has been really, really good. So some of those guys have, I know he's not a tackle, but some of those transfers have really come on strong. In addition to these interior defensive linemen, Dawson and Onye, I think, have played really good football in November.
Yeah, I mean, do they need to take a transfer to positively? Absolutely. Like whatever you want to use to describe it, they have to, in my opinion. And again, we went into this year thinking the interior of the defense might be the biggest question mark. And just peeking ahead to next year, I would contend that the interior of the defense, as we sit here today, would be the biggest question mark. I do think that they have some optimism about the development of Cole Mullins. I think, especially if Notre Dame can engineer another sustained playoff run, any extra practice time, I think, is really pivotal for Sean Sevillano. And I know he was mentioned a few weeks ago for his work on scout team or service team or what have you, but I think in speaking with people in the program, right now is a real pivotal time for Sean Sevillano, and if he's going to continue to have a perceived bright future at Notre Dame.
Do we know the nature of his ankle injury? No one's asked but he's been out. He played the game against Navy, and then he's out. You can break your ankle and be out. You can badly sprain your ankle and be out if you're 342 pounds too. But in terms of needing someone, they need someone. I mean, let me read this off. Elijah Hughes and Donovan Heinisch are coming back. Okay. Other than that, do you think Cole Mullins, Armel Mukum, Sean Sevillano?
No, they need help.
Chris Burgess looks good in a football uniform. I saw him on the field up close on.
And I thought I don't remember which game it was when he got a little bit of play, when he got a run there. I liked his effort. I liked his physicality.
And Davion Dixon is another guy that there's some optimism about his upside. You know, he's got to begin to show it, and he's got to recognize that when spring camp rolls around, he's never going to have had a better opportunity than what's in front of him.
I think other than Burgess, though, that's I'm going to be using that word all next year. Rotational players, rotational backup.
No doubt. They need to insert a capable, proven starter, and then somebody that maybe was in the rotation that
another Elijah Hughes type. You know that's
and maybe you might need something a little better than that, a little bit more proven than that.
I don't ever talk about defensive tackles on this podcast.
We're going to be talking about it a lot moving forward. Get ready. No doubt.
All right. From K. Garrity 8, a regular contributor, because I recognize the name. When looking at 2 or even 3 year groupings for Notre Dame by position, including this just signed 26 class, which group is the most impressive on paper? Which group needs to be augmented in the portal?
Go ahead, Drew, because I think you have a choice for most impressive first.
Yeah, I mean, I went defensive back, or I'll even go specifically cornerback. I mean, it's cheating if you can go 3 years because you can throw in Leonard Moore. Obviously, with hindsight, that looks pretty good. Then you throw in Dallas Golden, Mark Zachary, and then, I mean, they have some pretty good core here. So I think defensive back is just something that, as I said at the top of the show, that wasn't a position of strength. Even when they had really good guys like a Julian Love, he was still a lower-rated recruit who didn't have huge NFL potential at cornerback, and they really just flipped that position.
I think the depth at offensive line is really developing with, you know, Black and you got McKeel coming in, and you have Craig coming back from an injury, and we don't know exactly, you know, some of these guys. Wagner, is he going to demand money, you know, from elsewhere? Is he going to look to the pros? You know, defensive end with the way that Burnham is trending, Traore, BY came on late in the season. Logan Thomas really needs to take a step up now. Dunham and Iwatade coming in. I don't know how to rank these guys exactly. I agree with Drew as it relates to the cornerback position. When I look at that tight end position and see Premier, Flanagan, that's a pretty good trio as you move forward with some other guys coming in there. I would probably put those at the top of the list. Who am I? Linebacker.
I wouldn't say linebacker
because I think that the class that they brought in yesterday, I think that needs some work. I think that's a shortcoming in that class.
Ferramo obviously was a big hit, but in the last two classes, I would not do linebacker.
Right.
It depends on how much you want to fudge Burgess, because he could really help out this really good defensive end class with Christopher Burgess from last year. But he has grown into a defensive tackle.
Yes.
And they need him to grow into a defensive
tackle. No, they do. And he was working there in the preseason. So that was the direction I think that they intended right from the beginning.
Just briefly for me. Yeah. I mean, what they've done on the O-line and what they've done in the secondary carry the day.
Yeah. I think safety.
Secondary in general, because I like all of it. And then I would say, in this year's class, I actually love the two running backs, and you signed two top 15 running backs that could potentially give you a similar 1-2 punch to what you've enjoyed for 2 years from Love and Price. And so, again, similarly, give you that type of punch. I'm not comparing them to those two guys. I'm telling you, they give those two options. So I'm really bullish on what they were able to do.
I tell you what, two classes, you include Aeneas Williams.
Right.
Fulton Williams and Osborne makes a very good two-class haul right there. Yeah. Hopefully Kedron Young can recover.
Yeah, I mean,
I liked Kedron Young before he
absolutely.
You know, he's had two bad injuries.
Yeah, he has had bad injuries, but if he gets right, I think he's got a chance to be a really good. You know, he gives them something that they don't have, and he can say he's not a short yardage back, Tim. That's fine. He's 240 pounds. I want to see him slamming a line of scrimmage.
Well, you know, you got to play more than two backs for that to happen, but I digress. Final question. From Home Slice, will Notre Dame make the playoff? Yes or no? You can use any reasoning you want. Reading the tea leaves, gut instinct, logic, math, fandom, whatever.
Yes. Notre Dame will make the playoffs because BYU will lose. And then whatever happens with Alabama, maybe Notre Dame and Alabama flip-flop, or maybe I don't know. I'm just, I'll say yes, but don't ask me what my game control is in my answer.
You'll say yes because you don't want to ruin the party.
Go ahead, Drew.
I actually flipped my answer that I wrote down, and I'm going to say yes. Just I think it's close. I think the FPI has it at like a 69.2% chance already makes it. I think it's closer to probably 50-50 just based on some of the things we heard from the committee and them dropping down a spot. And, you know, it's really difficult to interpret how they're going to evaluate a head-to-head matchup if Miami's next to them. And as Bryce pointed out, is that because they want Duke's in and or Duke won the conference championship and they need to get them in? Like, there's just so many different scenarios. And Notre Dame's resume could change a little bit if Boise State doesn't show well. They might have four losses, but they're still, I think, a 4.5-point favorite over UNLV. So maybe I think Notre Dame's strength of record is 13th and Miami's is 14th. So Notre Dame could drop beneath them a little bit. At least it's according to the FPI. So there's just so many factors that if they want to justify something or not, they're probably going to be able to do it.
Is there like are the committee members are they tied to FPI in any way? I mean, I just like I don't see the correlation there. My answer is they deserve to. They deserve to. I mean, it's just the system.
Oh, that's not the question, Tim.
I understand, but I'm not. You know, like I just wrote a column today, and I don't like JB and I. You know, I mean, I'm following his lead a lot of time and what he knows and says. But I mean, everything that happened Tuesday night went against Notre Dame. So I can sit here and say, yes, they're going to make it, but I'm denying what I saw on Tuesday night. The system is broken until if we have a 12-team playoff and in this situation, Notre Dame and Miami are not in it. We have a broken system still.
I'm going to say Notre Dame's going to make it. I mean, BYU has to lose, of course. But I don't think they will go totally away from the metrics they used, where right now, FEI, it's 4 versus 10, Notre Dame-Miami. FEI plus, so that includes Bill Connolly, it's 5 versus 8, a little tighter. Sagarin, it's 2 versus 6, highest Miami is. Old BCS, it's 9 versus 14. And I also want to point out that television show got everybody pretty interested in watching on Sunday. Didn't it?
And let's say I'll add one more component since this is our last unofficial what's at stake, where you at Snake River. And that is you want Virginia to win. Like you want Virginia to win because you're counting the ACC as one of those 11 or 12 seeds as the conference champion, as long as it's Virginia. All bets are off. And then that elevates the pressure to get an ACC team in there. If it's Duke instead of Virginia. So that's my final two. You want BYU, probably close is better. And then you want Virginia to win, not Duke.
If there are two group of five teams in the playoffs, I'm throwing my hands up.
Then they did a poor job. If that happens, like that's when you realize you know, any machinations you tried to do to make this fun for Sunday, you messed up along the way because that won't be fun.
Can you imagine?
Well, and notice that the ACC and all its social media glory hasn't mentioned the fact that one of its title game participants got run by Tulane or mentioned the fact that James Madison led in the second half at Louisville very early in the season when everyone was healthy. So we haven't seen that on social media. I don't know why.
There were nowhere near as many gutsy yards in that Louisville game as there were in the Alabama game, John Bryce. And that is why you cannot count that game. And also, it was played on the 28th instead of the 26th. So.
Notre Dame's one of the best five or six teams in the country. What are we doing if they're not in the playoffs?
As usual, T.O., you run out to a 17-0 lead on me, and I've got nothing.
For John Bryce, who has nothing but great stuff from Football Scoop usually, other than this moment. For Drew Bentock, for Tim Priester, I'm Tim O'Malley. Thank you for watching, listening. Irish Illustrated Insider, we will see you all on Monday in some form. I wonder what the questions are going to be like, guys. No Sun Bowl questions, no matter what. We're not talking about it. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening.